The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and today we're going to be talking about parenting in the real world, and I'm excited about our expert today. Parents face complexities of multiple work responsibilities, school and after-school activities, extended family duties with maybe parents or relatives that need their help, supervision of digital connections when the internet imposes into their homes, and health issues and more. We all want to do the best for our kids, but many parents worry that they're falling short, especially when they hear constantly in the news of what can go wrong with our kids and young people in the world today. My guest this week on Family First is Christina De Valencia, a teacher, author and family therapist who focuses on the core responsibilities of parenting. Originally from Europe, she's lived in many different countries, and she's the mother of five children, so she knows from personal experience, and has counseled many parents and families as a family therapist. She's going to share insights about how parents can stay connected to their kids in these busy times, even when everyone's going in different directions, and what the most important responsibilities of a parent are. And how necessary it is to be a role model for your child, not just a teacher or policeman or judge. I'll tell you a little more about Christina before I introduce her. Christina De Valencia has a psychology degree, a teaching degree, and a master's degree as a marriage and family therapist. She has taught everyone from preschool to college and adult education as well. And helping others is her life purpose. She has an individual and family counseling practice in San Diego, California. Her website is ChristinaDeValencia.com, and she's the author of How to Create Passion, Spirit, and Adventure in Your Life, which is available on Amazon right now, and she has a new book coming out late this summer, The Truth About Parenting, Real World. Christina writes on how to improve your life on her blog at www.improveyourlifeblog.wordpress.com, and she does a lot of volunteer work. She's facilitated a women's group called Health, Wealth, and Purpose. She has also volunteered for the Elizabeth Hospice, Habitat for Humanity, and the PAX PACS programs and other nonprofits. She enjoys sailing. I don't see how she fits this in, but anyhow, motorcycle riding, rehabbing houses, writing, teaching, and spending time with family and friends. She lives with her husband in San Diego, California. So welcome to Family First, Christina.
Hi, Randy. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. So I'm going to start out just asking a little bit about your personal journey. A lot of parents have kids, but they don't start teaching it and counseling and writing about it. So how did you first realize that you had some special insights to share about parenting with your five kids?
Well, I guess I first became interested when I was growing up as a kid. I was watching my parents. I think all of us have this other part of ourselves that watches. Mm. Whatever situation we're in, we can observe what's going on. And I was very aware of that part. So I watched my parents, how they treated me, how they treated my siblings, and what I had to do. I had to babysit my siblings because my mom suffered with depression. And I babysat my brother when I was 7. I had to take him out for strolls. And anyway, that's what started it. And then when I had my own children, I watched again, and I wanted to give them something better than I had. And I think that started my journey into how to be a better parent. And it wasn't easy. And if my kids are listening, they might laugh and go, oh my God, they can tell you stories about the messes I made, because none of us is perfect. But I continually wanted to improve. And I think my greatest goal in life is to be the best parent I can be to my kids still, even though they're all grown now.
That gives me goosebumps, because I don't think there's any more important role on the planet than being a good parent. And it doesn't end just when they're all grown up. It changes, but you're still there as long as you can be. So I have a little grandchild now, and, you know, it's fabulous.
Right. Yeah, I have some grandchildren as well. And it's just a new role as a kind of a parent, yeah.
So that's a compelling story with taking care of your little brother at when you were 7. So how did you move into getting your psychology degree and going into teaching?
Psychology was probably always there. It was part of that watching that I was doing, always observing and questioning. And when I was in my teens, I had much older friends, and we would sit and discuss life. And so that it was a kind of a natural extension to just go to school and get a degree there. The teaching happened quite by accident. My daughter they had some exploratory programs in school when she was in middle school. And I think one of them was a German exploratory program. And she said, would you come and teach a little bit, talk about Germany? And I was really nervous. I thought, what do I have to share? But I went in, and I found myself really excited and getting involved with the kids. And the teacher was sitting back, didn't say anything. And at the end of the class, she said, oh my God, you have to do this. And she contacted the department head at the main office, who then contacted me and came to my house and interviewed me and gave me the job. So it was amazing how all this unfolded. I didn't do anything.
Oh, so your talent for connecting with the kids really showed right off. That's neat.
Yeah, so it was kind of exciting the way that happened.
Absolutely.
So I went ahead. You know, I started with elementary school and found that I really wanted to give something positive to that child, just even if it's just a little seed. You know, not lecturing, not you have to do your schoolwork, but something more. I wanted to give them a sense of they're worth something. I don't know, have you seen the movie The Help or read the book?
Oh, not yet. No, I'm familiar with it, but I have not had a chance to explore it.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't remember the character's name, but she would babysit this little girl and tell her, you is important, you is smart. Well, you have to read the book. I'm not doing it very well. But that's what I wanted to give the kids, and that's what I still want to give the kids. I want to give them a sense of you are valuable, you matter, you're important.
Yeah, sometimes that's quite the opposite of what you'll hear a parent say in a store or on the street of, oh, you're always so much trouble, or you're a bull in a china shop, or something that hurts their spirit.
Right, yeah.
I just heard a story today that there's a gentleman, some town in California, I think. It's in Colorado, that he's putting cardboard figures up to represent the nannies that are actually taking, oh, it's in Hollywood. That's what it was. It was around Hollywood, that represent the nannies who are really doing the parenting in these, very cushy environments.
Right.
And I thought it was fascinating. He just wanted the, he calls them the invisible people that he wants to have appreciated. And it's really important to know, you know, who's feeding these thoughts to your children.
Oh my goodness, yeah. That reminds me of an acquaintance I have. She's a nanny, and she frequently shared stories where the mom, a non-working mom, who needed a nanny for her two little girls and never had time for them. The nanny would read the bedtime stories, the nanny would feed them breakfast, and they'd want to see the mom, and she was busy. Yeah, so yes, they have a tremendous role, you're right.
Yeah, it sounds very Victorian. You know, you just turn the child over to a nanny and you go about your business, arranging the house or the social life or whatever.
Right.
But it's amazing when we see that today. Christina, what would you say is the primary challenge in parenting today?
Well, as someone who's been to other countries, I want to say it's our culture. And we're not aware of the impact culture has on us, especially if we haven't lived anywhere else. And within that context, we have given away our responsibility and accountability. So that's what I see as the biggest problem with parenting today.
So that the parents don't have a perspective on how it could be different from the culture that's being imposed?
We live in a culture that is instant gratification. I want it all now. Our kids are entitled and there isn't anything they don't have access to. Everything is lavish and over the top, the birthday parties for one-year-olds. I mean, a one-year-old isn't aware of anything like that, but everything is excessive. And
yeah, that can be quite amazing, this one-year-old parties. I remember when my son turned two, we had a couple of friends who had kids about the same age, and it was, you know, family parties, and he napped through most of it. I wasn't going to wake him. He didn't know the difference, you know, between one day and the next. But now I heard of a party where the parents spent $1,000 on their one-year-old child.
Yeah. It's the party is for the parent. It's not for the child, because the main thing the little kid wants to do, the one-year-old, if you give him a cake, he wants to put his face in the cake. That's
right. It's gooey, very interesting stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
So, what solutions do you suggest when you're working with families to get them a better awareness of how the culture is impacting their children in unnecessary ways that make their lives more difficult?
Well, that part can be difficult to do, to make someone aware of the culture, because if you're in it, you can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So you need some kind of outside perspective, and you can't tell someone, go travel and see. But you can talk about responsibility and accountability. In the classroom, for example, kids nowadays don't feel responsible for anything. They don't even bring a pencil. They have no paper in class. Those are just little tiny examples of how no one feels responsible for anything anymore. And I mean, in this culture, we have lawsuits for everything, because we're always pushing off our responsibility on someone else, something else. And if you travel, for example, in Egypt, there are none of the safety standards that we have here. So you'll find seven people riding on a small motorcycle. They're all hanging off the bike. And everyone has to be responsible for their role. You know, don't unbalance that bike. You
right.
have to take responsibility for your life.
I guess they kind of have to help each other hang on, too, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah. There are no barriers for walking along the water. I saw, for example, people going aboard a ship. And, you know, the gangplank they have with the guardrails on the sides. There was none of that. It was like a little wider than a 2x4, maybe a 6x4, that people walked onto the ship on. And you have to be responsible for yourself. And so this is what we don't feel, this kind of responsibility in this country, because we expect the government to take care of this or somebody else to take care of our safety. And we pass that on to our kids. You don't have a pencil, just go get it from somebody at school.
Yeah, that responsibility thing, I'm thinking that even in the home, I did a lot of family counseling in the 80s and 90s, and there was such a shift where parents were child-proofing, they called it, child-proofing their home. And I never even thought of doing that. I just sort of tell my child, well, you know, you don't touch that right now because it's very delicate. And he would pay attention. I expected him to respect, our things, and I respected his. And he took responsibility for his actions. And if he ran through the rim too fast and broke something, we'd talk about it. And he would go slower next time.
Right, you learn from experience, right?
Right. Yeah. So that shift to trying to make it so a child can never fall down and can never hurt themselves and can never experience any consequences is quite. I think it's even new in America, relatively.
Yeah, and in the long run, it's so damaging because you create adults who don't know how to be responsible for themselves. I mean, they'll learn how to drive and follow the rules there, but in other areas, in relationships, for example, it'll be very difficult to have a balanced relationship if you place the blame and the responsibility on the other person all the time. It affects you in so many areas in life. It's
certainly hurting. Yeah, my first career as an attorney, and in the last 20 years, there has been a huge shift there of just blaming someone else for anything that happens to you. And we're up on a break now, Christina, but when we come back, I want to talk more. I want to talk about attachment parenting and what that means in the family context. So we'll be back in a couple moments. We're speaking with Christina De Valencia, and she's the author of a new book coming out this summer, The Truth About Parenting, Real World. So hang in there.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe, has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Christina De Valencia, who's a psychologist and a teacher of all ages and also is a marriage and family therapist. And she herself has five grown children. And we're talking about how culture affects families and how little responsibility we tend to expect from our kids today in America. And having grown up largely in Europe, Christina has a broader perspective on this. And we were talking about the need to inculcate responsibility and to make children feel valuable and able to carry responsibility. So we were talking about some examples of how to do that. And you said at the break that you wanted to share a little more about that, Christina?
Right. When we try to teach our children responsibility, we often do it by lecturing, screaming, criticizing. And children learn by your example. So if you're lecturing about something, oh, for example, something that happened to me, it was difficult to get my son up in the morning to go to school, to catch the bus. So he would sleep until the last minute and I had to drive him.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we argued about it, the more he felt that he could do this, because my arguing caused him to abdicate his responsibility because I was taking it on. I was taking on the critical role. I decided to drive him to school. So really, he didn't have to take any responsibility.
Right.
And that took a while for me to see that. He did it in other areas of his life as well. And I fed right into it. And when I got it, we sat down and had a talk about it. And I explained it to him. Because when I got it, I saw it clearly, how I was always doing things for him. And at the same time criticizing that he wasn't doing them for himself. It was taking away from his sense of autonomy. It creates resentment when you take away someone else's responsibility on a subconscious level. They're not aware of it. All they know is that they're resentful. And it creates a burdensome, heavy feeling on the part of the person who's doing that, who's taking care of another human being in that way. So when we sat down and talked about it, he was astounded. He said, wow, I didn't realize that. And we began to shift things at that point. Every so often he would tease me. He'd go, hey, do this for me. And I'm almost ready to do it. And I go, oh, wait a second, he's playing a game with me. But
yes,
does that make sense, what I'm explaining?
Yes,
about?
It does. Christina, I can picture that kids are smart. And if they know that, you know, that you have a very high priority that he get to school, then he doesn't really have to take responsibility for getting up on time, because you're going to get him to school no matter what.
Right.
But so he's able to manipulate you based on your priorities. And so one of the things that you're describing, I think, is that you shifted priorities a little bit. You're saying, like, okay, you know, getting to school this particular morning isn't as important as you taking responsibility for your schedule and seeing that through. And kids are very smart. They do, if you see it and explain it to them, they're like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I did have you over a barrel there. And you kind of, you had a button where school was that important to you, but you just deactivated the button and said, let's look at this a different way. So that's really cool. It's a great example.
But changing that can be difficult, because if you've done something one way for the life of the child and you decide to change it, when you begin to see what you could do differently, you have to expect a transition period. The child will push hard against your new behavior. I have another great example for that. A young parent has three boys, and the youngest one would be fussy. He slept in the same room with his other brother, and he'd be fussy at night, so they decided to put him in bed with them. And he was getting too big, so he needed to go back into his own bed. And they put him in his bed, and he had fits and tantrums.
So
they put him back in their bed. And we're totally distraught about how can we get him to sleep in his own bed again, because he won't. And they were taking the standpoint that the little boy was in charge by screaming. He screamed, and then the parents had to do something about it and take him back out of his bed. So I said, leave him in his bed, and you have to anticipate at least a week's worth of screaming. He's only maybe 13 or 14 months old. And that's exactly what happened. It was tough. They had to close the doors. They had to plug their ears, because it's not easy to listen to your little one scream. But after about a week and a half, he got the message and understood that this is where he was sleeping from now on. So the transition period can be tough, and that's the hardest part to go through when you decide to change something in your parenting style.
Yes, for sure. It's a really important point, I think, because parents might say, well, I tried it and he didn't get it, and we're back in the same pattern. And the parent, I often say the parent, you know, you're going to forget too. And you're going to get many opportunities to try it the new way. And the child may not believe it the first 10 or 15 times. But it will change if you stick with it. And if you're the parent, hopefully you have more stick-it-to-itiveness than the child.
Yes, that's so important. You have to have stick-to-itiveness, yes. You have to have consistency. That is really very important.
Right, and the kids want to please you. They want to get along, so they'll eventually catch on if you stick with what you believe is going to be a better way.
Right.
That's a great example. So you talk about attachment parenting. So people hear that and they're not sure what it means. What do you mean by it? How do you explain it, Christina?
Well, really, the best way it can be described, Erik Erikson talks about that, and I really like his theory, his developmental theory. From birth to 18 months, the child has to attach to the parent or the caregiver. That means they have to develop a trust. The child has to know that they can rely on that person to provide the love and the nourishment and the care that it needs, because it's unable to give any of that to itself. And it's the most essential part of our development. If we can't form a secure attachment, our brain will begin to wire itself for insecure attachment, which causes a lot of distress and anxiety. So some of us have a lot of anxiety, and it can usually be traced back to that we didn't receive secure attachment. Because if our needs are met during the stage, we will learn to trust that life is basically okay. And we have a general confidence in the process of life. And out of that, we'll be able to form healthy relationships in adulthood, and life will be easier to handle even during tough times.
So,
again,
so true.
If we don't experience that trust when we're little and we're constantly frustrated because our needs aren't met, we can end up with a deep-seated feeling of worthlessness and a kind of a mistrust in general, which will translate into all our future relationships.
So
an example would be, yeah. I think in the 50s and 60s, parents were encouraged to feed their kids every 4 hours, to nurse their children every 4 hours. So that meant that they would put the baby to bed and after 4 hours pick it up and feed it, regardless of when the baby got hungry, because they wanted the teacher to schedule.
Right.
They thought this would be helping to develop a healthy routine for the baby. But in fact, it just causes the child to feel abandoned. And you lay there crying and no one comes.
Exactly.
And I think we know.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think we all have heard stories about orphanages where babies are just left in cribs and they're given a bottle and nothing else. No cuddling, no hugging, no kind of bonding. And the terrible issues that result out of that later in life, and some of those babies even die because we're desperately in need of attachment.
And that includes the touching, the voice, and
touching, talking to, making that child feel that they matter, that they're. You pay attention. It's not just having the baby on your lap and feeding it, but it's actually being present with it, because little kids feel if you're really there with them emotionally or if you're absent. They sense it.
For sure. And I think when they're babies, they don't have words, and their way of expressing needs is by whimpering or making faces. And if you don't respond to that, they may never develop other communication because they don't have that basic trust that someone will respond.
Right, right. I know a grandmother. She's raising the little boy because the daughter is on drugs, and they ended up taking the little boy away from their daughter because they found him frequently left alone in his crib as a baby, 6, 7 months old, while she was off doing whatever, and he was so distressed, he started gnawing on the crib. There were teeth marks and the paint was coming off on the crib.
And oh my.
It was a very, very sad story. And now you can see him feeling very insecure. They didn't get him until he was about 14 months, I think. You can still see it. He's 4 years old and you can see that insecurity in him, that quick turn of his head when the grandma's not there, or the panicked look when he feels unsure about his surroundings or even being in new surroundings. And it's so deep within him that he's not aware of it, and he probably never will be unless he gets discussed. And he's going to carry that into his life. So there's this lack of trust that life is okay, that things will turn out all right.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's a really sad case. There was a case in Philadelphia just recently that people noticed that these two kids were just playing out in the yard all day, and there was trash in the yard, and their clothes didn't look like they were fresh, and the neighbors finally called the police and said, I don't think anybody's taking care of this child. And the mother did come back from work and swore that she was taking care of them. But I think they eventually did take the kids from her because she was just leaving them outside in the little tiny yard. It was like 10 by 10 by the sidewalk. Yeah. And just neglect, and the tragedy of it is how that affects those children for the future.
So sad. I don't understand why our adoption laws can't be different, why somebody has to pay so much money to adopt a child when there are all these children that need to be in loving homes.
But yes, it's strange. Doesn't make any sense to me. Voice America has a show dedicated to how to help families get the money they need to adopt a child, but it can take 2 years and a minor fortune. And there's so many kids who need that parenting not 2 years from now.
Right. Yeah. Now.
Yeah, that those from 2 years old to 4 years old can make all the difference in their future life.
Right. If you get a child later on, I mean, regardless of how much love you give it, those basic foundations are formed, and we can't go back and change it. It's very difficult.
That basic idea of whether the universe, whether the world is a good place to be or not, whether your needs will be met or not. Yeah. So, how would you suggest that a parent who obviously wants to do what's necessary to develop that sense of security and responsibility in the early years. What are some simple examples of situations where the parent can do the right thing to give the child that sense of security and responsibility?
Take the time to be present with your child. I'm a strong advocate for not going back to work. I understand it's not always possible, but many times you can shift something around and you can stay as a mother. Or if it's a gay couple, one of the partners can stay with the child. I think it's really important that the child have that the first few years and you don't give it to daycare or some other caretaker.
I think that's an important point, especially you coming from Europe. I had a friend from Germany who said, we tried that in the middle of the 20th century. It didn't work, shipping off the kids so the women could go back to work right away. And most countries in Europe do give more maternity leave, and we're kind of draconian here still, assuming mothers can just go right back to work, and all the effort is to find better childcare instead of saying, wait a minute, the mother's the best childcare.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that would be my first. I can tell you an example of my daughter. She thought she had to go back to work after the baby was born, and her and her husband sat down and looked at it and figured out how much it would cost to go back to work, transportation, clothing, daycare, etc. And they decided that they wouldn't be much better off if she went back to work. So they made a few sacrifices and she stayed home.
That's neat.
And I think that's possible.
That calculation is really important because it is very expensive. The obvious things that you listed, the transportation and, you know, stockings or better clothes or and daycare can be very expensive. But there's also other things. There's more stress and there's ways that the family might need more expensive ways to de-stress if they're both have jobs and both trying to take care of the child and meet the needs of a child who's not getting their needs met emotionally. There's that stress element that they're going to have to detoxify from as well. So it can be very expensive not to have one parent there.
Absolutely. More and more with the gas prices going up. But so I would encourage parents to for one of the parents to stay home with the baby. And I also encourage those baby carriers where the child is on you for as much as possible. I remember doing it and my back was hurting. And for a period of time, we didn't have a dryer. I hung the clothes on the line. And and so I'm pinning the clothes in front. The baby's hanging in front. My back is hurting, but it's important. In more native cultures, they all carry their babies like that.
Yeah, even up to 4 years, as I understand it. So we're up on another break, Christina, and it goes so quickly. But when we come back, I want to talk a little more about what you've observed between different cultures that you've experienced, the families. So please, listeners, stay tuned to Christina De Valencia and her great insights about parenting in the real world.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're talking with Christina De Valencia on parenting in the real world. She's a psychologist and a teacher and a marriage and family therapist and has five children of her own and has a great blog called Improve Your Life blog at WordPress.com. And she's also an author of How to Create Passion, Spirit, and Adventure in Your Life and has a new book coming out on parenting, The Truth About Parenting Real World. That'll be out late in the summer. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your books, but before that I wanted to talk a bit more about your experience living in different cultures. You said you'd spent some time in, well, I guess you grew up in Germany, is that right, Christina?
I did, yes.
And you've been in France, and obviously you've traveled in Egypt, you mentioned that, and also Mexico, I think you said?
Yes.
So what that gives you an extra perspective on the way that our particular culture touches us in a particular time and place. What kinds of differences would you like to share with the listeners that you've seen going from culture to culture?
Well, I think you mentioned something about Asian versus French versus American, and I want to say that I like the French or European approach the most because they assume that the parent is the authority figure without making the child small, without taking away from the child's importance. But they set firm rules and boundaries, such as, this is what we're eating. In America, we say, this is not a restaurant, but, you know, the mother says, this is not a restaurant, you'll eat what's on the table. That's the attitude we need to have. The kids, mm-hmm. as far as eating goes, kids are so picky, and parents will go, oh, well, what do you want? That's not a question you hear in Europe. This is what's on the table. This is what's getting eaten.
Yes, I find that quite amazing. And the kids immediately get that impression that they can eat whatever hits their fancy, and it's usually salt or sugar or fat, instead of the parents having control and saying, this is good food, this is what I put on the table. If you're hungry, you're going to eat it, and if you're not hungry enough to eat what's there, then you can go hungry till the next meal.
Exactly, yeah. And like with everything in life, whatever you learn as a small child, you will carry forth into your adulthood. So if you've been raised with healthy foods, you will, even if you have a period of going crazy on pizza and junk food, you will eventually go back to that, eating healthy. Same with the way you've been parented. You will eventually probably go back to the way you've been parented unless you understand a little bit more about it. And I'm digressing a little bit from your question, but I think for parents it's important to understand a little bit about child development. The stages children go through. They are not little adults. They're little children. They do not understand what you understand. You have to also be a role model. And if you didn't have a good one, get some information. Read, go to classes. There are lots of groups. There's this radio program. I mean, we have so much available to us nowadays where you can learn a little bit and teach your child responsibility and accountability within you role modeling. You have to learn to understand yourself and make the effort to understand the impact our culture has on the child. And I just lost my train of thought.
Well, I think in the home, a parent can actually create their own culture. When the child's really small, they have total control if they choose to use that authority. And I wanted to go back to that point you said about in the European home, it's assumed that the parent is the authority without taking away from the child. And that's such an important point, that the child is the child. The child knows they're a child. They know they need the adult. But in our culture, we want the child to feel free and spiritually strong, but somehow we twist that to think that they should have absolute freedom and we shouldn't set any limits. And that completely backfires, because then the child is treated like a small adult and doesn't learn anything about how to function in the real world.
As a matter of fact, it creates a lot of insecurity if you let the little child think it's in charge. And like mm-hmm. in the grocery store, the little kids have tantrums. I want this. I want that. And the mom goes, well, if I give you this, will you be quiet? You're making the child the authority figure in the relationship. Can you imagine how that little kid feels? Here's the big parent who should be responsible. And here's the little old me going, huh, wow, I'm in charge. This is scary. I don't know how anything works, but let me try. I'll just be a little tyrant.
And I think it is their job to find the limit, but there better be one, because they want that reassurance that the parent knows what's good for them and is going to guide them through a grocery store, to take your example. And if they get to bargain with the parent, there's no limit.
Yeah, right. They need that. They need those boundaries. And so there's more of that in Europe. You still have more boundaries. I know everything is changing. Everybody wants to be like America, but
And what did you see in your parent, in your teaching experience? The teachers I've met feel very strong about parenting because they kind of see the results in the classroom of the kinds of parenting that's going on at home. So what insights can you share from that experience?
Right. Again, there are those boundaries. You see all these kids, particularly in high school, there is no respect. You know, in our country, we don't have respect for elders. And so you see that particularly in the classroom. No respect and no sense of responsibility again. Because the parent takes all the responsibility in the form of lecturing and criticizing, they don't allow the child to experience the results of their actions. And it shows everywhere. Especially in the classroom, because if you're a teacher in elementary school, you have the kids all day, and you can see it there already.
Wow. Yeah, I think a lot of parents really, a lot of teachers burn out early because without that respect, you have a group of students, you can't really teach. You're just trying to put out little fires all over the place.
Right, right. Yeah, and then there are more and more kids in the classroom, so... So again, it boils down to respect and accountability for the child. And with the way we give trophies for everything, whether you've earned it or not, that's not real world. You have to earn what you get. You don't just get it given to you. We have to earn whatever we desire.
Yeah, I see people getting diplomas in kindergarten, and it's kind of a little strange.
Yeah, it's very silly. It doesn't build self-esteem. Self-esteem comes from doing something yourself and struggling and finding that, wow, I can do it after all. That is the only place you can get self-esteem, not by being told, oh, you're so great all the time, because they're just empty words. And the child knows that. We don't give children enough credit for all the things they see and sense on a much deeper level than we as adults usually experience.
So true. We just have a few more minutes, Christina, so I want to be sure people know about your books. So can you tell us a little bit about... The first one that's already out, How to Create Passion, Spirit, and Adventure, and that's from for any adult, right? It's not just for parents.
Yes. They have a number of stories, a lot of stories actually, about people who have found what they love doing and make money that way. Amazing, miraculous things that have happened to people to get the life that they love. I was surprised. I thought I'd find most people just go to work and, I got to put in another day to make a dollar. But so many people actually create the life they love. And that's what the
great.
Book is about. And it shows you the many different ways you can accomplish that. And actually, they're still working on the cover. So it will be out probably next week at Amazon.com.
And which one is that now?
That is How to Create Passion, Spirit, and Adventure in Your Life.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
Yeah.
And then your other book, The Truth About Parenting Real World. Tell us a little bit how that came about.
That was as a result of being in the classroom and wanting to give parents. It's a small book. I want it to be simple, something you can actually implement. And I want it to be available to everyone. Because we need a little bit of guidance. Like I said, our culture pulls us in such a, I want to say destructive direction that we need just a little bit of a hand up to understand what we might have to do. It talks about teenagers because teenagers are truly creatures from another world. We all need a little bit of help with those.
Right. So people can go to your blog, Improve Your Life blog, on WordPress.com, and your books will be available on Amazon.com. So watch for that. Look up Christina de Valencia, And thank you so much for all your insights. They're great. I love the broad perspective and how to build responsibility in your family. Any quick last words, Christina?
Nothing quick, no.
Well, thank you so much for being family first. A lot of great stories and great advice.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, you're very welcome.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.